Out and about this week, let's start off with Bitch Trip Run.
I said bitch for some reason.
Oh, yeah, you were... I said bitch strip.
Bitch strip run.
Fucking, I would play the shit out of bitch strip.
Bitch strip run.
My God. Right. Take two. Welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 249. I am your host, James Gilmore, and...
Scared.
It's the Halloween edition of the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Peter Wellington?
Oh, hi!
Peter Wellington's back, everybody. Hey!
Hey, guys. It's
been a while. Where have you been?
I've been all about... I've been to the Ukraine.
Saucy, spicy, international, although that's a given, I suppose. What were you doing over there? You were talking to games people, right?
I went, hey, games people, you make games, I write about them. It was at Casual Connect in Kiev.
Is that something that relates to the dress code? So you're all wandering around in, like, sandals and three-quarter-length trews and stuff?
Mm-hmm, yeah, and slacks, and just kind of, like, lazily high-fiving people instead of, like, handshakes and business cards.
Very good. Any games at that thing or not?
There was a couple. There's a story on the site, and there was some fun stuff, some indie people, and it's a weird event. So,
okay, noted. And also, we've got Keith Andrew 2. Hey, Keith.
Keith Andrew 2.
Yes. Well, you know, Keith Andrew 1. Yeah. Well, he was like, you know, 2012's model. We've got the new one. It's running KOS 7. Which is, you know, slightly flatter and a little bit laggy.
It's an inch bigger as well. Do you know what? That was a really boring story about Ukraine. Do you want to hear a really fun one?
Go on then, like, hit us with the interest.
Okay, so on my first night, I went to a popular pizza chain, American pizza.
I'm already in. Carry on.
In the Ukraine.
In the Ukraine. Yeah, they got pizza over there. The place, by the way, is lovely. The people are lovely as well. But so I was in this pizza chain, and I ordered my delicious pizza. Buy one get one free, so I thought bargain. And within 10 minutes I had been approached and accosted by a drunk man who spoke to me for 35 minutes. I couldn't quite work out if he was so drunk that he was slurring, or if he was sort of like falling back into Ukrainian, knowing that I spoke English. And then at the end of the conversation, he suggested that I live with him for 3 weeks so that I could teach his son English.
That is the start of a beautiful friendship.
I was,
culminate in a murder.
And I am kidding you not. I literally said, "That sounds lovely, but I do this podcast back in the UK, and they'd be worried."
You
if
used
I didn't
this as your get-out clause.
I actually did.
Not your family would miss you, or your girlfriend loves you.
That was the first thing I came to. That was the first. I thought Keith and James, they'll miss me.
I am touched in a special place by that.
That was actually, that guy was me dressed up. It was just all a prank. But yeah.
You were testing your loyalty to the cast.
There was no one else there. No one else say, "What the heck? Can you please leave?"
Strange drunk man.
He was a drunk man in a fast food restaurant. And they just went, leave him.
I'd get very British and very rude at that point.
I got busted. Would you exhale through your lips?
yeah, I got very British in that I got very awkward.
Nodded in an effort to appease without offending.
Yeah. You know those people. If you're stuck at traffic lights in various cities, you'll get people who come up and start washing your windscreen without asking.
Yeah.
I've been known to have full on slanging arguments with those out of the window. They annoy me. Sorry.
I took 2 weeks to get these windows this dirty. Get off!
They just annoy me, and they just don't stop.
My world record!
No. And they just do it, and they think you're going to pay them. And you go, no.
And then the Guinness Book of Filth, they stop calling.
Anyway. Yeah, it's, yeah.
Oh well, games! loads of updates for you this week on this Hallows Eve. First of all, Infinity Blade 3 players, you've got a great big update called Soul Hunter. If you download it, what it gives you is access to a new nasty campaign git called Oslim. To give him his full title, he's like called Oslim the Big Deathless Prick or something. I don't have the details to hand, but he's something like that. He's a great big git who has not one, but two Infinity Blades. And he comes at you with both of them, like a bastard. And what you have to do is fight him off with either of the two, you know, main characters you've got. It's Cyrus or Aya. Iza? I always forget how you pronounce her name. And if you beat him, you get the twin Infinity Blades. So
What does that do?
It's like having one Infinity Blade, right?
Right, go on.
Only it's approximately twice as good.
Right, now, here's the thing. Twice Infinity...
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, the Infinity title, I think, has already been abused enough at this point. I mean, yeah. We all learned an important lesson from the Neverending Story, I think.
Yeah, sure.
That we shouldn't take these things too literally. So you can download that Soul Hunter expansion right now. Extra quests, extra weaponry, and some big git whose name I can't remember. Also, Sonic Dash players, if there are any people still playing Sega's Endless Runner based around the Sonic person, there is a new boss who's going to turn up at random points throughout the game and start laying into you. He's a big purple git called Zaz.
Oh, yeah.
And yes, you may recognize him, Peter, because he comes from Sonic Lost World, the game you reviewed on the 3DS. Is that right?
That is correct.
And you were the only person who actually quite liked it.
Yes, that is also correct. Like, Zaz. Okay, Zaz is a good character. Zaz is, it's a series. The Sonic series, I always felt, kind of added a lot of characters that were a little bit surplus, but is that like the new ones in Sonic Lost World are pretty decent. So this is good. So what does Zaz do?
I don't know. I have literally no idea. They just shared on the update that they've added him. He's going to pop up every so often, and you're going to get into a boss battle.
Oh.
Who came up with that name?
What, Zaz?
Zaz. Sounds like someone from Hollyoaks or something.
Same people who came up with Amy and all the other surplus characters, as you described them, Peter.
Big the cat is the worst one. Big the cat.
Oh, bless him.
You can play against him right now. He's only going to be in it for a bit, though. It's like a limited time thing. So if you want to play him, dive back into Sonic Dash right now. Also, XCOM and Civilization Revolution from developer Firaxis, both of those are on sale at the moment. I think everyone's gone mental because of the whole Halloween thing. It's holidays, so they've gone all generous. You can get XCOM Enemy Unknown for £6.99, which does sound like a lot, but that's half price because it usually retails about £13.99. So that's dead good. While Civ Revolution will set you back just 69 pence or 99 cents.
Bargain.
What a bargain. So jump on those if you are interested. And finally, Deus Ex The Fall, which is the first-person iOS interpretation of the new Deus Ex universe with all the yellowy gold black stuff and people wandering around and cybernetic espionage and all that. It was all right, I thought. Like, it controlled better than most iOS first-person shooters, I thought. A bit short, but had some fun aspects to it. They've released a light version of it, because usually it's about a fiver, so you can now try out the first roughly about an hour of the game free of charge, and then see if you like it.
Is it called that, The Fall Light?
It is The Fall Light. That's what it's listed as in the App Store.
Sounds silly.
I mean, I think that's quite appropriate, because it has got a bit of an amber glow to it.
That 45% works.
Yep.
I thought lights were out of vogue.
Well, no one calls it light anymore. LITE.
I just thought kind of demos as a thing because. Can you hear them horses? I thought I can't hear them in real life, but they're outside. It's quite spooky. The demos are just kind of an idea. We're just kind of a bit. No one seemed to. They were all the rage. You know, everything had a light version back in the day, didn't they? And then that kind
even
of
the
disappeared.
DS. How's about that? Yeah. But if you do decide to upgrade, having downloaded the light version, and if you do it now or reasonably soon, you can get it for just £2.99 or $4.99 instead of the usual fiver. So that's cheap as well. So Deus Ex fans, rejoice! And as it is Halloween, let's start off with something spooky.
Won't this be the 1st of November?
Yeah, but it's Halloween now.
Right. So
listeners,
imagine that it's all spooky and
it's last night before you ate all that candy, got on that massive sugar high, and smashed in that person's.
Can I just stay at the start of? I mean, this isn't the start. We've been doing this podcast now for 10 minutes or whatever. I absolutely hate Halloween.
Oh, what a surprise! Keith doesn't like something.
I like fireworks night. Obviously, that won't mean anything to any Americans, but Halloween, I hate it. It's pointless. And I was very pleased when I moved into an apartment because I no longer get snotty-nosed kids turning up at my door wanting me to feed them.
Demanding candies under threat of violence or tricks. Yeah. You've got the Americans to blame for that.
Well, aren't you a spoilsport, Keith? James, tell me all about spooky games.
All right, then. Spooky games.
Yay!
Hey, you're not going to like this, Peter, because you freak out whenever I mention the name of the franchise.
Oh, no!
Yeah. Telltale Games has revealed The Walking Dead Season 2. We've been waiting for it for a while, and we knew it was coming, but they have officially properly lifted the lid on it, including some details and a bit of a trailer and some pictures as well. Now, quick spoiler warning, if you haven't played through to the end of the first one, then just like skip ahead about 10 seconds. So I'll give you a warning from now. Clementine's back and you get to play as her. She's not dead. She's fine. Isn't that lovely?
Oh, you are playing a dangerous game.
All right, you're back now. No, I gave... There we go. Everyone's back. They waited 10 seconds. That's official spoiler warnings.
It's okay, good. Yeah.
So, you know, that's fine. Yeah.
I can't... Seriously, though, I can't believe that the dog did it. That's...
I know, it's incredible. And there's aliens. I never saw it coming. Yeah, anyway, so what you're going to be able to do is, it's pretty much more stuff, you know, more of the same thing that you loved in the first one. So it's making terrible decisions and having zombies coming at you and who you're going to let live and all that terrible stuff. And you play it for a bit, feel thoroughly depressed about yourself, and then want to end it all afterwards. Just like the first one.
Season 2.
Exactly. There's a trailer up on the site and images to go with it, so check it out. Spoiler warning, like before, there is a bit of a spoiler in the article, so, you know, be careful. If you haven't completed the first season, get on it. There will be a release date coming soon. At the moment, that's all we have coming soon.
I can't believe that you get to play as the zombies this time.
I know, that is incredible. Oh, it's so much. Just come and check out.
You suggest that as a legitimate tactic.
Why is it a tower defense game?
To play that.
Check out all this spurious banter.
I watched an episode of The Walking Dead, the TV show.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it confirmed my suspicions that it will be a bit depressing. Like, I started watching it.
I don't like the series that much.
People don't like the TV show.
I was totally down with the idea. I love the concept, and I watched the first season, and all the way through, it was like, I can't really engage with any of you people. And, you know, it ended on a bit of a blur note, and apparently the season 2 was worse than season 1, so I just went, nah, can't be bothered.
It's do you know, the 4th season is the highest ranking television show ever.
Really?
Like the first episode.
More than Breaking Bad?
Yeah, it's something like the first episode of the 4th season is like the most watched first episode of anything ever made. Something like that. Like some ridiculous figure like
sure,
that.
Sure, says
yeah,
I.
Seriously.
Yeah, well, the game's better, in my opinion.
All right.
And there's more of it coming, so look forward to that.
Americans will watch anything. They like Lost, for God's sake.
I tapped out of that nice and early. And
it's
then
like watched Shakespeare.
Watched as everybody else got progressively more angry as the seasons drew on. From the outside, it was really satisfying.
Is there swearing in Breaking Bad?
Is there swearing in Breaking... There's a bit? Not a great deal.
Well, because what I'm saying is if there's swearing, it'll be on cable. Whereas So it'll have a much less viewers than something that isn't.
Could you make a video game out of Breaking Bad?
What about cooking meth?
Is that what it's about?
It wouldn't get released in Australia.
All right.
They get all fussy about that sort of thing. Violence and mess. They banned...
Nothing gets released in Australia.
No. And they've now introduced an R18 rating, finally. And they're still stopping stuff coming over. Mm. What's the... I'm not thinking Fable, not Oblivion, but Fallout. Fallout 3 got refused classification because at points in the game, the painkilling drug that you use to keep yourself alive is actually called morphine.
Right.
And because in the game you were taking morphine. That's right. considered drug use, and therefore the game got refused classification.
In so much as it's medical drug use?
Yes.
Oh, Australia.
Yeah, it's a funny state of affairs over there. And even now with the R18, they still have hassle over this. So any Australian listeners, we feel your plight, and we're sorry your government doesn't think you're capable of making decisions about the entertainment you consume. Right. Never mind, you got kangaroos, though, so, you know, big up yourself. Yeah. Anyway, Zelda-like adventure game Oceanhorn, which has been floating around for, I think, years at this point,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, it has.
We've been talking about this for a long time. It's finally got a release date. And what's more, it's next week. It's November the 7th. It is finally coming out. If you haven't heard about this already, it's a very much kind of Zelda-like, top-down, explorey, questy thing. Nice sort of 3D graphical style. It's not 2D like the old Zeldas. But it seems to be very much influenced by those kind of, you know, those games, dungeon crawlers and that lot. It's very pretty. They've been making it for bloody ages, and everyone's been getting excited about it for the whole time. And finally, yes, real release date. We've got an interview with the guys behind it, Corn Fox and Broz, and we'll probably be reviewing it next week, I expect, given all the fuss. There's also the Gamescom teaser they put out as a trailer of it in action. It does look dead pretty. Is anyone excited for this, or do we think it's just a Zelda knockoff, or is that what we want? Because Zelda's never coming to iOS.
I don't give a monkeys about Zelda, but I think there's a wider question here.
Controversial. Go on, then.
And this will be get ready for this, internet. Why is it okay for independent studios to take an idea from a larger studio and repurpose it for their own? You know, this is effectively a Zelda game, most of their marketing has been based around, hey, it's kind of like Zelda. Like, you know, that's a key word as part of all of this. Why is it okay for an independent to kind of rip off a style of game as unique as Zelda? I say unique, the 12 games or whatever. But why is it okay for them to do that? But if, like, Nintendo, for example, were to rip off, let's say, Luftrausers or something like that, like, it wouldn't be cool for them to do that. Like, and it's exactly the same with, like, Game Loft and their, like, Grand Theft Auto ripoffs. Mm. And it's like, oh, no, that's really shady and horrible. Why is it okay for Oceanhorn to basically just be a 2D Zelda game?
On Game Loft, I don't have any problem with them mirroring...
I know you franchise. Don't, and I don't either, but generally...
I don't think anyone else would either, if they were any good. So if any of these horrible GTA things they do, which are verging on offensive, were amazing, you know, I mean, there are plenty of games that have taken what GTA does, and lots of people love...
Saints Row.
Yeah, exactly. Lots of people prefer that. And you know, things like Crackdown had an audience. And, you know, no one has a dibs on a model as open as that. In the same way that Zelda, you can't really pin that down to it. It's not like a Match 3 where there's something that you can definitely say, oh, they've definitely taken that. That is exactly the same. You know, right. They've just changed the thing. The genre like that is, you know, there are lots of different games. Capcom have done, haven't they? The ones that are very similar to Zelda, that aren't Zelda. The other thing is that if Nintendo were reduced to doing games that were very similar to certain indie hits, people would start to question what's happened at Nintendo, whereas, you know, they're supposedly the risky, trying out different things kind of company. If all their creativity had gone to the level where they were looking to mobile indie games and mirroring them, I think their share price would fall through the floor and people would be ringing the death knell.
So is it a case that we don't mind... And I use the term we, you know, loosely, but people don't mind, say, for example, Saints Row, I think, is actually a very good example. They don't mind a game like that and a company like that coming along, as long as it's a decent version of that similar thing. The difference?
I think it more depends on the thing that they're copying. So GTA 3 and onwards, people might think of as being original, but if you actually look at it, it just borrows from several other different genres and packages it up in a different way. So it's nothing, you know, nothing's really original.
And it itself was a kind of top-down, simple, basic, crude car game to begin with. Yeah. And even with the Zelda thing, I think it's slightly different here on mobile. I'm not necessarily 100% behind this anyway. I just know that it has got a lot of fan support already before it's even come out. But there is the issue that Nintendo's been so vocal about saying none of our stuff is ever coming to iOS, get knotted, that there is therefore kind of a little void, a little niche there left to be filled, where people want a Zelda-like game on their iPhone. But they know they're never going to get the real Zelda, so along come these guys with Oceanhorn to say, "Here, we're going to scratch that itch for you."
I mean, think about all of those like free to play monster battlers that are basically trying to be Pokemon. Like,
yeah.
The number of people who want a game like that. Yeah, I completely agree with you. It's funny though. There was that news that came out today that Nintendo is one of the only companies this year to have, I want to say, 4, maybe 5 first party games that sold over 5 million units.
Is that because that's all they've been selling?
Well, I mean, I suppose it's because, well, yeah, exactly.
Third party versions of like the Wii U for like your Batman games and things like that haven't been great.
Yeah, I mean, like you buy a Nintendo console for Nintendo games. So I suppose that is kind of their predicament at the moment. And like you point out, like games like Oceanhorn come along and it is this nudge, nudge, wink, wink. We all remember these games. We've sort of made a similar game to it. Like,
if they just released Zelda on here, we'd all buy that instead, frankly.
Exactly. I guess Nintendo's problem is we would all buy it if it was £1.99.
And, yeah,
you know,
that's true.
And they want 30 quid.
They do. So. They want Square Enix prices, the buggers. Moving on from games that are clearly inspired by old classics to flat-out ports of old classics. So, if you're ready to get all side-scrolly and beat-em-uppy on me, come, take a trip down memory lane to the time when Double Dragon
was in
the arcades. Yeah, it was great series. It was fun and silly, and it had those bosses whose heads were too big for their bodies.
A Bobo.
Bless you, yes, him. They're coming! All three of them! Well, three of them. I don't know if there are any more. The Double Dragon trilogy will be coming to iOS and Android before the year is out. It's being done by Dotemu, who actually do emulation stuff quite well, as a rule. And so that gives you... the trilogy is Double Dragon, Double Dragon 2, The Revenge, and Double Dragon 3, The Rosetta Stone, which I remember playing quite a lot of on my Amiga, The Rosetta Stone.
Yeah. These are all the NAF versions that you don't want to play.
Are they? What, like, horrible emulated things? Or
no, they're the arcade versions. The arcade versions of Double Dragon.
Right.
Double Dragon 3.
No, I'm getting it at school now. Hang on, let me get comfy.
Right, okay. I love the Double Dragon series, but it has only ever worked on the NES, the Master System, and yeah, maybe the Amiga or the Atari ST.
Tell me why, Peter Wellington.
Because in the arcades, they are basically sort of takes on stuff like Renegade. And Renegade was sort of new, like it felt new-ish at the time of its release. But Double Dragon just came along and did exactly what Renegade was doing. And the first one was good. The first one was fine in the arcades. But it took it going to home consoles, and especially the NES versions, to actually be decent versions. Double Dragon 3 in the arcade, I believe, isn't actually made by the people who originally made Double Dragon. When they did make the jump to the NES, they were very much based on the Kunio Kun series, whereby they felt more whole. They felt less like credit crunchers, which, you know, which is basically what those games kind of lived and died on. They felt more like whole games that you could take home and properly complete. And these arcade versions, like, they're not that good.
So they're like pared down and mostly designed absolutely. To suck quarters from your wallet, which should fit perfectly with the current free-to-play climate.
Absolutely, it would do. But like, it's this trilogy of games which I feel aren't particularly good, and they look rough. Like, the Super Nintendo version of the original Double Dragon is a much better looking game than the arcade version. Like, and Double Dragon 5, which was weird because there wasn't a fourth one. That is a true fact. But Double Dragon 5 isn't, I think it's called Shadow Falls, isn't present. Like, there's no word on that. There's no Double Dragon from the Neo Geo. There's no additional versions from like the NES, which, as I say, like, feel really different. It just feels like a really wasted opportunity on a company that did brilliant work with the Raiden games. Like, Dotemu is a great company, and they're being squandered on three pretty naff games that Technos want to continually push out.
Oh, no pleasing some people, eh? Three Double Dragon games, none of them are any good already. How's about that? Well, if you're happy to play the arcade games, I suppose, it'll be coming out sometime before the year is finished. And it's three games and it's Double Dragon and that.
I'm furious, James.
Clearly you are. All right, bloody hell. All right, before we go into the out and about bit, I want to talk about, because it is still Halloween here, regardless of what Keith says or whether he cares, and regardless of whether it's November the 1st when you're listening to this, I don't care. We're going to talk about it. Spooky games for Halloween. Right, we did a little top five. I'm going to read you what I consider to be the top three. Because this ain't no democracy, and I don't agree with some of these choices, frankly.
Can we have can we have the Top of the Pops music on? Can you license that for this countdown?
No. I could go... That's going to have to do. I don't know what that was.
What music that is.
But it's going to do. All right. In no specific order, but I'll leave the coolest one till last. So I suppose that is an order. What am I talking about? We're going to say Into the Dead, which is sort of kind of scary in an interesting sort of way. If you haven't played it, it's actually an endless runner that's played from a first person. You're charging through fields with a gun and sort of zombies are coming at you, which sounds like possibly the most dull and generic thing you could possibly imagine, a zombie game where you run at people. But it's actually good. It's a free-to-play one that manages to use the model well. It has that little system whereby you get three missions per kind of run, and if you complete them, then you get three more missions, so it keeps things interesting. And it's actually quite creepy and very atmospheric. Have either of you played it?
Yes, yeah.
Peter, I'm very surprised to hear you. You've got some stones.
Zombies.
I tried to play it to overcome my fears.
And?
It didn't work.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's fine. Like, it's a good auto runner. Endless runner, I should say.
That's right.
Like, I don't think it's very scary, but it's very good.
I was impressed because if you do actually play it quite sort of close to your face, and it gets quite intense. Well, you know, filling out your peripheral vision. You know what I mean?
Just put that on the posters. Play it close to
your face. Play it on your face. Exactly. Well, it's true. That's why you go to the cinema for a big screen. It's an immersive experience.
Of course.
So staple it to your nose, and you will be impressed. Right, getting on to proper creepy stuff. I'm going to go with, because we've already talked about The Walking Dead, so The Walking Dead series. Now, some people would argue, I understand, that this isn't that scary either.
I don't think it's that scary either, James.
Oh, well, that's a surprise. Well, I kind of agree with you in as much as it's not like jump scares. You don't watch it and go, "Whoa!" and get freaked out. There's this impending sense of doom and dread and general unpleasantness.
I mean, we have that from day-to-day life anyway. I didn't really...
That's true. I get that from queuing in Tesco's.
Never queue in Tesco.
But I do quite like that. That's the feeling I like. Whereas most modern horror is based around, like, ooh, quiet, bang! Ooh, quiet, bang! Which is a bit cheap. Those jump scares, anyone can do it. It's not scary, it's just startling, you know?
Yeah.
And that's not the same thing. Whereas this kind of sense that, oh, it's all going horribly wrong and there is no escape and they're coming for me and I can't get away and, oh my God! That building kind of claustrophobic sense of unease, I find scarier, personally.
Just a lot of talking, isn't it?
It's tense. There's tension.
Yeah.
And you want that tension to break, but unfortunately that tension usually breaks by a zombie.
There were shocking moments. Mm. One in particular, which I won't talk about.
Oh, you mean the airport scene at the start, yeah.
With the aliens.
Yeah.
Where they commandeer Concorde and fly into the White House.
But I wouldn't describe it as, I would say, yeah, it's tense. But tension for a different reason, not because you feel like there's a ghost about to appear.
I see.
Or, you know, you're going to be eaten by a pumpkin man.
Are there ghosts in The Walking Dead? I suppose they're the floating dead, aren't they?
Well, it would appear there's a ghost in the second one, actually, yeah. But,
is there a ghost?
We'll stop all this speculation. Well, if everyone has issues with this, you can talk to Harry, because Harry's the one who put the list together. Mm. However, the last one I'm going to talk about, I do wholeheartedly agree with him on. Year Walk.
Mm.
Which is made by Samogo, the guys behind Beat Sneak Bandit, and more recently, Device 6.
Device 6.
Yeah, which I utterly loved, which we've covered in great detail on the site, and I understand you, Keith, have done a great big massive how they made the game thing with Simon Flesser of Samogo.
Not me personally, but yeah, we have. Yeah,
it was a great big article up on Pocket Gamer Off Biz.
A very, very big making of with lots of nice pictures of concepts and stuff.
It is, and it's a cracking read. And if you've played it, go and check it out. Probably check it out after you've played it because it's, you know, got pictures and various spoilers. But Device 6 was dead clever with the kind of, it uses text in a way that it turns into a map and you turn your iPad around and you're reading it from all angles. It's very clever. Before that, though, came Year Walk, which is this very unusual first-person game in which you sort of scroll. It's like you're strafing your view left and right. And at certain points in the environment, say, for example, you scroll along sideways and come across a bridge, you then kind of drag down on the screen and you'll walk across that bridge and step into another plane of the environment. So it's got that parallax scrolling thing going along. It's quite unusual, but It has some really creepy imagery, some strange little eerie puzzles, and some really nasty stuff about a goat in a suit with a monocle and his dead goat children. It's really quite unsettling at times.
See, it's kind of game that only the Scandinavians can make, really. It's one of them.
Is that what it is? It's this particular kind of Nordic terror.
Yeah, you know what they're like.
The Nords. I'm going to be talking about another one, though, later on, which is my sort of favourite game of the week, which is also a spooky, weird affair. But more...
It's just spookiness, honestly.
Halloween, Keith. Boo!
Yep.
About this week, we'll start off with Bit Trip Run by Gaijin Games, which is £2.49 or $3.99. If you've played the PC versions of this, which is, I think, where they started off life as Flash games, if I'm right, something like that, they were very kind of quirky. It's like a little bit retro because the character's basically like a pixelated tower, essentially, like a few pixels strung together, but the backgrounds are all 3D and really quite beautiful. It's another endless runner, but it's done in sort of a quite clever and quite tough and challenging way. It's an iOS port, so the controls are a little different. Apparently there's a bit of lag when you're jumping, which can throw you off at the beginning, but you do get used to it. And apparently, according to Mark, it's mad, feature-packed, and quite addictive. So
$2.49 is a lot of money.
Yeah, but the original games have pedigree. They are supposed to be pretty good. And so I'm interested to try this one out. And I will be doing so next week for AppSpire. So that's Bit Trip Run, £2.49, $3.99. See, what I did there was I put the title at the end of my little commentary bit as well as the beginning.
Because we got some feedback, didn't we?
We got some feedback from listeners who were like, you say something cool about a game and then you move on and you don't say the name again. To which I would say, just rewind the podcast.
We have a second
and hear it. Yes, this isn't just me and you. This isn't a group therapy session that we do once a week.
We've got two listeners. There's Ralph.
I know we have one listener that said I was very handsome, actually. So.
Was that Ralph?
We should probably put that in the headline when you write this up, James.
What, Keith, one handsome, handsome listener?
Yeah. No.
Why? How do you know? How do you know our listeners are handsome, Keith?
You're just diverting it, Keith.
How do you know? How do you know?
You're diverting it,
Keith. Papa Sangre looks good. James, what is this about?
Papa Sangre. Oh, it's a game about sound and spooky things, which I'm going to talk about later. It's that game I was going to talk about. I was going to keep
what
it
game
top
are you
secret.
Talk about later?
Papa Sangre 2. But you've got unspoiled now. So, I'm still not going to say anything about it. Other than I really like it, and I'll tell you why later. It's £2.49, $3.99. Mm-hmm. Stay with us for more. Next up, Chippy. By Glitches, which is one of your preferable genres there, Keith Andrew. It's a time management game.
We played it at the Big Indie Pitch.
Ah, it's one of those.
Yeah, it's clever in that it takes the kind of the time management model that everyone's seen in Diner Dash and so forth, where you're rushing around trying to serve customers all at once. Mm. But it's flipped it and kind of made it look contemporary, if you know what I mean. The look of it is very swish. And yeah, you're putting together orders for British people who come in looking quite depressed, most of them, into your fish and chip shop. And yeah, you've got to give them sausages and chips and fish and whatever, pies.
That's what we eat in Britain, American listeners. We eat fish and chips.
It is one of them games that, like, I mean, literally the kind of the idea is the same as all of the time management thing. Is the setting is different, but the same, you know, do everything at once as quickly as possible. But the style of it is very swish and looked incredibly nice. And it didn't win, but it was one of our honourable mentions.
It
came very close. And yeah, it's very cool.
Good stuff. Well, you can find out for yourself right now. That's Chippy, £1.99 or $2.99. Oh, Pocket God. I know that franchise thing. But look, Pocket God Ooga Jump. It looks a bit like another game with Jump in the title, doesn't it? Yeah.
Isn't this like 3 years too late?
And this is weird. Well, Pocket God was kind of a god game in which you put elements together and made stuff, as I remember it. I think
to have taken that IP and applied it to a jumping on platforms as high as you can go game,
Yeah, it's basically...
Seems very 2010 to me.
It's so creatively bankrupt, that's what it sounds.
Yeah, it's basically Doodle Jump with a little kind of caveman-esque character or tribal character jumping instead of a weird alien. That's pretty much it. It's typical Endless Runner stuff, or Endless Jumper in this case. Objectives, boosts, leaderboards. 69p99 cents. Pocket God Ooga Jump. Do your worst. However, big news! Anomaly 2's out! Which is big news for if you happen to be a Tower Offense fan. Yes, not Tower Defense, but Tower Offense. Anomaly Total Warzone, rather, was the very flashy, graphically impressive translation of a PC Tower Offense game. So, whereas Tower Defense, you set up your towers and wait for the enemy to come and attack, in Tower Offense, you are the enemy wandering down channels, blasting away at your enemy's defenses. It's futuristic type setting, and you take control of massive, you know, tanks and all that kind of crap, bundling down with big old weaponry. This time, same deal, but they can all transform. So all of your tanks turn into gigantic walkers if you want them to do that, or vice versa. And so they both have kind of two states they can attack in, and therefore two different types of weapons, and therefore there's an extra layer of tactics involved. So it freshens up the formula a bit. Apparently still very much the same thing, but it looks gorgeous and it plays really well, and Harry liked it. I think it got a silver from us, I think. Review just went up. You can read it right now. And if you like the first one, you'll probably like this one. So yeah.
Can you transform into a boombox?
No, I think that's a different franchise.
Oh.
One which has already been ruined by other people.
Oh, so, sad.
Yeah, you're late to the game if you wanted to mess that one up, I'm afraid. But don't worry, Mark Wahlberg's got us covered for 2014 or whenever the hell it is. Yeah, Anomaly 2, £2.99 or $4.99. I'll mention one or two more because there is a few. The Thor movie just came out over here. On Tuesday, I think it came out. It's got pretty good reviews. The Thor The Dark World, the Phase 2 Marvel Universe stuff. And, of course, you've got to have the movie tie-in, and, of course, it's got to be done by Gameloft, naturally. So, Thor The Dark World is free on iPhone and iPad right now, and it's, Mark's described it as basically a button basher for a touchscreen device. He's trying to coin the phrase touchscreen tapper, I guess. That would work.
It's not working. It's not working for
me. Not working for you, no.
It sounds like someone very annoying. You just come along and tap your touchscreen.
Isn't this Dungeon Hunter?
I don't know. I haven't seen it running.
I think it's Dungeon Hunter.
It looks all right, but apparently you are literally just like tapping on ice warriors and whoever's around. Just hit them with your finger, and Thor runs over and hits them with his hammer, I assume. And that's apparently about it. You can cast some lightning in that, but apparently the controls are a bit iffy, and it's all freemium as well. I think the freemium model, right, while it has its place in some areas, I'm sure, not anywhere near me, but while it has its place, I think it's really strange when it's implanted into superhero franchises, especially with like what happened with Batman, because you've got these powered superheroes who are like, punch, punch, kick, punch, I am a superhero, I'm a bit tired now and I need to have a 20-minute break before I kick any more ass. It feels really... They always put these energy systems in and they lock you out. And it makes Thor seem like a bit of a, you know...
It's because the freemium model at the moment, like... And obviously, we've talked about it, it seems like, every episode. But the freemium model at the moment is problematic in so much as every company seems to think that it's a good fit for their game. And actually, you're quite right. It doesn't work for every game. And like making a video game about superheroes, which are naturally overpowered human beings that you always want to win because that's the drama. You want good to vanquish evil. Adding onto that a way to pay to make sure that, you know, you do vanquish evil every single time. It's just another layer of complexity to an already difficult genre, the superhero video games.
I just found it a bit peculiar when Batman and Thor and these superheroes get shagged out after 5 minutes of a couple of punches.
Yeah,
exactly. I mean, yeah, like, what is it? Who's made this?
Gameloft.
Yeah, so there you go. They're not bothered about that, are they? It's a franchise. It's a license they've bought, and
they've whacked out another version. So yes, you can download it, Thor: The Dark World, for free right now. If you must, finally. A title which caused Keith much merriment earlier, Juice Cubes.
We edited that bit out, didn't we? They won't know that I was laughing at that.
That's why I told them about it. That's
the magic of radio, Keith.
But having just broken the fourth wall by referencing it.
I'm being quite mean to you, Keith. I don't know why. I don't know why.
He's been a grumpy mare.
I know. It's
that angry drunken man in that chip shop or whatever, wasn't it?
Maybe I'm a werewolf.
Maybe he gave you a Ukrainian disease.
It's possible. Grumpiness. This is from Rovio Stars and looks well disappointing, doesn't it?
Yeah. Up until now, the Rovio Stars stuff has been pretty good. You had Icebreaker of Viking Voyage, which was pretty good, and you had Tiny Thief, which was really lovely.
Brilliant. Yeah.
That point and click adventure thing. This one, it looks like it's another color matching like puzzler, isn't it?
Yeah.
It looks pretty. I like the look of the cubes.
The fruit in the cubes looks all right. Yep.
If anyone clicks on its iTunes page, they'll see a terrible logo. Oh. But the actual kind of the UI of it looks nice.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's interesting that they would want to publish a game. Maybe it's amazing. I don't know.
Well, Mark reckons he's played it for a bit, and it says it's a bit.
I like Match 3s though, so maybe I'd be, maybe I would be all over this.
So do I, but I like them when they're good. Apparently, this one is a bit Candy Crush in terms of its "give us all your money now" approach to the consumer, which perhaps is a bit off-putting. But you can try it yourself and find out. It's free, Juice Cubes on iPhone and iPad right now.
Juice Cubes.
Come sit upon my throne of games.
Welcome everyone to the chamber wherein lies the throne of games. It's dead creepy in here now. We've got that horrible fake spider's web stuff that you see everywhere that's like sort of stretched candy floss.
Yeah, horrible.
Candy. Yeah,
I'm not clearing this up later.
I've got minions for that sort of thing.
Right.
You don't wind up with a chamber this size without acquiring a few minions along the way.
Yeah.
I thought Keith would laugh at that. No. Said something about chamber and acquiring.
But if you say the phrase juice cubes, he'll give you go.
Yeah, apparently that's a laugh riot. Never mind. Right, so throne. Who's going to hop on it? Peter, you haven't been for ages. Get up on that throne, you.
All right. Oh. So on the way back from the Ukraine,
stop talking about the Ukraine, is he?
It's brilliant.
Ukraine, honestly. This Ukraine, man.
I know. Hello, Dennis. I just remembered that was the name of the guy. He was called Dennis.
Dennis.
I know.
Dennis in the Ukraine.
That was the weirdest part. That was the weirdest part. I was like, really? Anyway,
it's not Dennisky.
No, Dennis.
Dennisky. Racist, Keith.
Racist.
What they talk? That's how they talk.
Anyway, so. I downloaded and because I got all excited last time I was on the show about Type Rider, so I downloaded it and gave it a go. True to my word, and do you know what? It's one of my favourite games I've played this year.
It's good, isn't it?
It's really good. So Type Rider is from Bulky Pix, and it's kind of like it's got a few elements of Trials, I guess,
yeah.
In so much as it's a physics-based game in which you take two circular objects that are connected, much like wheels, I suppose, and can make them move left or right across a landscape that changes quite drastically at times. The sort of physics-y, puzzly action is great. It's very good. It's kind of like 7 or 8 out of 10 kind of play. It's got a few bugs in it, and it'll like drop you off of the world very, very, very occasionally, but and it will freeze up once in a while, and all that fun stuff that comes with video games once in a while.
Yeah.
It's very sort of 7 out of 10 action. What is amazing about it is that I now know everything there is to know about Helvetica, because it's actually about fonts and the creation of fonts and how language and printing and communication has kind of evolved since cave drawings, essentially.
I love fonts.
You'll like this, Keith.
You will absolutely love this. It is staggering. I never once put any thought into why I type in Times New Roman on my
web
processor. Because essentially I am lazy. No, I completely agree with you. I'm lazy. I never thought, well, what's the point? What is it about Times New Roman? Why is it that Microsoft Office has decided that Times New Roman is the way that I should type into a screen, And to see the way that, we came from putting our hands onto walls and blowing like this paint stuff onto them to leave our mark to say, you know,
was that Windows 95?
That was Windows 3.1 there, yeah. And when you could still do top left double clicks. And, you know, like when we still did that, all the way up to typing into a word processor and even, I don't know if this is a spoiler, but Comic Sans, like, you know, how all of this sort of stuff like came about.
The font and that shall not be named.
The font that shall not be named, one of my favorite fonts.
Oh, they're the worst.
I know. That's why I love it, though, because it is the worst. The thing that really impresses you is you'll collect these little stars, these little asterisks, and it'll come up with a little pop-up. And you tap on it, and it will teach you all about the font, the society and the world that was around and happening at the time that that font was created. Mm. And you don't realize that people died to just print words. Like, there's a sort of very liberal, I would say quite a liberal leaning to the game. Like, it is very much about the arts, and it is from creative people who tend to sort of lean left wing. But, mm-hmm. you know, it really does highlight, you know, the counter-reformation, the counter-enlightenment and the effect the Catholic Church had on trying to squash, like, any printing that wasn't the Bible. Like, yeah. It's utterly fascinating.
The thing that I liked about it was that this can all sound very dry if you're reading out. Like, it's basically going to give you a massive history lesson when you play, which most people be like, well, I don't care. I don't want that. I want to play a game. They do have those text dumps where, like you say, you collect an asterisk and the book opens and you can read it. It's a very nicely presented book, which gives you images and information about the font itself. But each level is constructed from the font. Like the letters and the characters and whatever the theme of it might be. For example, if you go into the Industrial Revolution and stuff, it'll suddenly start appearing in these kind of massive machines, and you have to trundle along the graphs and things that the fonts were created upon and the printing presses used. It's all like the information, as well as being given to you via text, is actually organically built into the architecture of the levels. That is smart.
That is like in terms of like aesthetics and gameplay. Yeah, it definitely like draws on those. On the things that were kind of happening around that time and the stuff that they're talking about in the text. But really, for me, like, that trip to the Ukraine, I went to the Ukraine.
Did you? Well, I did, yeah. I had no idea.
I did. So, like, the thing that kind of struck me was that there are people at the moment who are making games and, in a wider sense, like, just kind of apps that are effectively, like, this new wave of edutainment. And like I spoke to a guy, a game designer at a company called Fishing Cactus, all about their new title called AlgoBot. Mm. And it's basically teaching programming, but without like typing a line of code. Right. And it's brilliantly put together. And with Typewriter, like I felt like I was learning all about this very niche subject of history, but I was still learning history. And I feel like perhaps it was just coincidence and I played all these games at the same time, but I do feel like there is this great untapped potential at the moment, and some people are starting to dig into it, of games that will teach you something, whether that's like in terms of like morality or ethically or just pure education. And like games have this brilliant capacity to sort of trick you into learning things. And I feel like I certainly was tricked into learning all about fonts. And like to say that like a game has been able to teach me about why I should care about sans serif fonts, you know, that is an incredible achievement. So I thoroughly recommend this.
Was it called for the listeners?
It is called. Do you know what? I really hope he gets in touch with us again on Twitter and says thanks. It is called Typewriter.
Type:\Rider.
Type:\Rider. Word.
I've said before, and people always think I'm joking, but I'm generally not, that one of my favourite game series is Broken Sword. And namely, that's because before I started playing it, I had no idea about the Templars. I had no real idea about the Crusades. I had no idea about all this kind of period of history that is still layered, you know, in the very streets we live on. And obviously, there's a lot of stuff that isn't true in that game. But what it's based on is utterly true. And it very cleverly, I don't know whether intentionally or not, but teaches you about a massive period of history throughout the course of the game, and it was a real eye opener that you know, and Assassin's Creed kind of tries to do something similar but plays about with it much more, and obviously isn't quite the same. And even like you played things like Medieval Total War, they touch on, you know, things that actually happened. And
it almost doesn't matter with something like an Assassin's Creed, for example. It almost doesn't matter how much they kind of play with that fact and turn it into fiction. The thing that I think that games have like the real potential to achieve is to inspire the desire to go and learn more. So Like, at the end of Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, I put the controller down and I went, like, turned my computer on and started learning about the Borgias because I thought they sound absolutely fascinating. And so, you know, I took that and went off and learned something else. And it's that opening the door to learning that games can do really, really well.
It's really good. Right. Papa Sangre 2, you guys. Mm-hmm. It's really good. What is it, I hear you not ask? Well, it's a kind of survival horror game based entirely around audio. So, you are presented with a screen which is essentially a compass and two icons at the bottom, both being feet, and two at the top corners, both being hands. You put your headphones on. You've got to wear headphones or it ain't going to work. And through your headphones slides the silky, smooth, slightly northern voice of Shawnee Bean of Boromir and Ned Stark fame. And he starts telling you stuff, worrying stuff, stuff like you're dead. And having been informed you're dead, you must then do what he says, basically. You're Sean Bean's bitch for a while as he bosses you about the afterlife. The way that the game works is it uses binaural 3D, which is clearly a nonsense term.
I've done a bit of that in my day.
Yeah, I came down with a bad case of binaural 3D a few years back, but I got better. They amputated my finger, it was fine. Yeah, it tricks you into thinking that there's stuff in front of you and behind you. And this is a slight difference from how the first game worked, from what I understand, which I played, but it was a while ago, like 2 years ago. The first game, you had to kind of swipe the top of your iPhone or iPad in order to turn around. This time, you can use the accelerometer. So you literally, to play the game, the best way to play the game is you stand up in a room in the dark with your eyes closed, holding your iPad and spinning around on the spot, doing what Sean Bean tells you to do. Which, for any third-party observer, must look a bit twatty.
Well, no, because if Sean Bean asks you to do something...
Well, I know, I'm obliged.
Well, this is why I keep buying phones from O2, because he keeps telling me to.
He's very powerful. Ned Stark says, so you got to oblige. Obviously, you'll die at some point, because he's Sean Bean. And then you won't have to worry. But until then, you best do what he says. So yeah, you might feel like a bit daft doing it. Like, but do it. Like, if you get this game, genuinely do it. It's the best way to play it. It is surprisingly immersive and surprisingly creepy. So, as an example, I won't spoil a lot of what's in it, but you get taken through these museum rooms near the beginning. And the idea is you're looking for memories. It's all a bit surreal, obviously, because you're dealing with the afterlife. So you are trying to find memories and collect them and bring them back to Shawnee Bean. They emit this kind of beacon signal. So you get this recurring kind of do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. It's a particular kind of noise, a different noise for every memory. And you have to spin on the spot to orientate yourself towards that memory. So as you rotate the iPad around and yourself around, you can tell whether it's in your left ear and then it drifts across the front and into your right ear. And then it actually gives the sensation that it's going behind you. Due to a clever kind of thing to do with timbre and tone and probably dropping some of the treble off it or something, you can tell when it's in front and behind, which technically you shouldn't be able to do because it should just sit in the middle of the stereo field. So it's quite smart in that way. And so they build these very rich 3D soundscapes in which you've got not only these memories you have to collect, but creatures. Weird creatures go... like scuttling past you. So it's coming from left ear to right ear, or it's off in the distance, and they start approaching you and you have to kind of run away from them. The way you move is by tapping on the feet, left, right on the bottom, like you're walking along. You can also run, but if you kind of mess up the running, if you go left, right, and you kind of stumble over yourself, you'll fall over and you have to get back up again. And all the while, the creatures are approaching. So if you're doing this in the dark and doing it properly, it gets quite intense and a little bit weird and genuinely quite scary. I really, really liked it. I'm a survival horror guy anyway, so this is my bag, but it's a bit daft and a bit surreal, and you might feel a bit strange when you're playing it. But if you kind of give yourself over to it, you do have to sort of give yourself over to it. If you choose to do that, you'll have a really good time. The downside is that you can't play it for 5 minutes when you're in that queue in Tesco's waiting for the end of the world. Because you'll look a bit silly, and it's just not practical. So it's not a pick up for 5 minutes and put it down game. You really have to sort of invest yourself in the experience. But if you choose to do so, you'll have a hell of a time. You might freak out, Peter.
I don't want to do that.
But Sean Bean says you must do it, Peter.
Oh, no, I've got to do it.
Do it. It's really good. Everyone get it. So that's Papa Sangre 2. I think it's about £2, £3, something like that. It's a bit different and it's totally worth it. Go for it. Which leaves us with Keith of the House, Andrew.
No, I don't know what you were doing.
As promised last week in the podcast, Keith of the House, Andrew, has played a game.
I've played a game. I've been playing it while I've been sat listening to you two witter on.
Ah, good. As long as we weren't being in any way interesting or informative.
I like funds. Yeah.
Be... You perked up a bit then, didn't you?
Yeah.
Ooh, sounds a reef.
Yeah, I've been playing. It's called Friendly Fire, which is an interesting name considering the connotations that has. Mm-hmm. But yes, it's called that. They've gone with that. It is a free-to-play game in a kind of Clash of Clans mold.
Okay.
Which I've always purposely avoided Clash of Clans and Backyard Monsters and all these games because I'm not like I don't mind management titles, but I think there's a line when a management game becomes more about management and less about game, and when you take a model like this and put it in free to play where everything you do you either have to pay or wait, you really really start stressing the management side of things and the game side of things kind of falls away, and it's kind of what this makes me think of. It's an intentionally amusing kind of game, so you have to build a base and then build up an army and then send that army out to take out other people's bases,
right?
In real life. And the nice part of it is that it uses your actual location. So my base is literally on the street in Manchester where I live. Mm-hmm. And it has the entire road layout there and you can recognize it. And that's quite cool. And so you build up your little base, you build up things to build tanks, you build up the kind of currency of the game is oil and kind of sprockety things, which you have to keep mining for to be able to do things. And obviously, the longer you leave it, the more you get. And then you can build more things.
Right.
So, yeah, you build up your base, you defend it, you put in turrets, anything else you want to defend it. And then you send your tanks out and you try and take out other people's. And there's a global ranking. And obviously, the lower down this ranking you go, the more chance you've got of winning. I foolishly tried to take out someone's base in the top 10 and lasted about 2 seconds.
It's got the smack down, did you?
Yeah, it's intentionally cartoony amusing. So you've got this general who kind of guides you to the game, who's basically moustache and eyebrows and nothing else, and kind of makes these rah, 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 red noises as he talks, which is quite amusing. It's intentionally light and silly, but it is essentially just another one of these Clash of Clans games where you build up a little base and send your men out to try and take out other people's bases, and when you've gone away you might find your base has been attacked. And I mean, I suppose there's a strategy of where you place things on your base and how you defend it and what kind of troops you want to build and who you want to take on. I suppose that's all down to you. So, you know, you could be daring, you could be clever and go for someone really difficult, or you can just attack little people who've just started the game, as I did, to kind of get to know it. But it's hard. I find it hard to find where the game is in these things. I kind of just feel like I'm someone tapping the button when it tells me to. And actually, there's a definite cleverness of having it mapped to a real map, a real world, in that because I know this is my street, there's a little part of me that actively wants to defend it in a strange way.
The territorial part of you.
Because the base is literally where my block of flat is. So you kind of think, oh, this is my, you know, and when you go off to fight, it tells you where in the world you're going off to fight, and you take a little Union flag with you, and if someone attacks you, they're attacking Manchester, you know. It does add a level of personalization to it. But that aside, I don't know. I don't know what I'm meant to be getting from it other than this kind of urge that I need
to
defend.
Supposed to be getting a massive imperialist stiffy.
Maybe. But I mean, it's kind of, you know, it's very light. It's quite bizarre in the tutorial. I don't know whether this is different where if you play it somewhere else in the world. But in the tutorial, you, as a Brit, go over to America and attack the Americans, which I thought was interesting. Might be what a lot of people want to do right now with the NSA and so forth. But yeah, it's quite strange. But you know, it's hard to gauge right now because I've been playing it for 3 days and this is a free-to-play game. So depending on how much more involved I get, obviously, and I can see from other people's bases that I've tried to attack, that it gets incredibly complex and they expand way out. And cracking these nuts would be very hard indeed, because they're just completely cased in turrets and so forth, and that's impossible. But I don't know. It's taken an already established model that's kind of being done to death now anyway, and it gives it a slightly different theming and adds a bit of geolocation stuff. And I'm not bothered about free-to-play either way, but I have to say, when you come up a game like this where every single tap you have to think, can I be bothered to wait 14 minutes, or do I want to pay? And that is ultimately the way you shouldn't be doing free-to-play. Any advocate that knows about free-to-play talk about it should, you know, you should never stop your player being able to do something. They should be able to do something without having to pay. And very quickly, I was just finding that everything, I'm waiting to do everything. And any enthusiasm I might have for going and attacking some poor person who's just started the game 5 minutes ago is waned by the fact that I've got to wait to build some tanks for 15 minutes.
So what you're saying is friendly fire is not all that friendly?
Well, you know, if you don't have a brain, I think it's quite friendly. and if you just kind of want to be told what to do and have this thing guiding you through, telling you what it wants you to spend money on effectively, then and it's very well presented, and it looks very good, and it's just,
but not for you.
And I don't know whether this is the case with Clash of Clans, because I avoided it, but are people playing these games really enjoying it, or is it almost just like a bit of an addiction that
they get to that compulsive feedback loop?
They've got to defend their base, they've got to build it up. It's not something that I would ever play voluntarily, but I've got to write some words about it. So
I'll write the words and then put it down forever. Was it Friendly Fire? Friendly Fires?
Friendly Fire.
All right. A slightly lackluster verdict from Keith Andrew there.
Yeah. I don't know. I might be getting harsh in my old age.
No, stand by your gun, sir. I tell everyone it's rubbish and then take a load of flack from it on Twitter. It'll be brilliant. Trust me. Which brings us to the end of this spooktacular Halloween podcast. Thanks for listening, everybody. I hope you had fun at Halloween last night, and that you all gave little kids candy and dressed up as stupid video game characters or whatever. That's what I'm going to do right now. I'm totally not going to do that, but that's what I'm saying I'm going to do. You got any plans? Pete, are you off out to scare people tonight?
Well, I'm about to get changed into my Sailor Moon costume, but not for Halloween.
Okay, that's just Thursday night.
Yeah.
All right. And Keith, you're going to sit inside, presumably, and glower at the teenagers wandering past.
I'm going to open my window and shower abuse at them, of course.
Much better. Well done. A proactive stance on Halloween there. Thanks for listening, everybody. I'm going to go and put a pumpkin on my head. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.